What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely,
so stay tuned. Welcome once again to Upfront on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. The United Nations estimates that the population of street children around the world is about 150 million. These figures continue to grow each day. The typical age of a street child varies from place to place, falling between the ages of 6 to 18. In developed countries, street children are usually over the age of 12. The proportion of girls among street children is reported to be less than 30% in developing countries and about 50% in many developed countries. Now, many of them work on the streets to support their families. Others just run away from their families because of different forms of abuse.
For many of these kids, life on the streets means that they have no access to basic services. They have no chance of receiving an education and often have to navigate the treacherous terrain of gangs and drugs. And studies show that many of them are adopted by gangs, quote-unquote adopted by gangs, who hold them hostage but also function to satisfy that sense of belonging for children without families or other support systems. Now, research by UNICEF shows many cases of exploitation and abuse at the hands of these gangs. There's also abuse at the hands of police who are supposed to protect them and other vigilante groups in the name of cleaning up the streets. So it is a tough life. Now, the continued presence of street children across the continent should be of great concern to the leadership in many of these countries, not just as parents who should worry for the welfare and plight of any child living alone outside of a home. It should be worrying because street children present a lost potential for a continent where over 60% of the population are youth. So, what should be done? That's the topic of our discussion today, right here on Upfront on The Voice of America.
Some are child-headed households, so they go on the street to look after their young ones, to cater for them. Another cause here, it's poverty. Our parents are giving birth to many children, which they are not able to look after. They are not ready to adopt family planning methods. So you find a household is having, the maximum is 10, 12 children. And it's very difficult for parents to look after them.
Actually, for me, the government should first assess why those children are in the street and then see if there is a possible integration within their existing families or in other hosting families.
There should be policies in place to help those parents take care of the children. If the parents cannot, governments should put in place mechanisms, projects, and say institutions or centers to take on those children that have nowhere to go.
If one of the parents is lost and the children find out that they couldn't support them, then they end up in the street. Off Plato, Screech. I'm out here balling, I know you hear my sneaks. Jesus was a cop in the Yeezy, play beats. Hobo flow, the Holy Ghost, get the hell up out your seats. Preach. Human being, walk through the fire.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, we're still talking about the issue of street children in Africa. Like I said earlier, many of these kids who live on the streets, life on the streets means that they have no access to some of the basic services. And that's contrary to Article 27 of the Convention on the Rights of Children that are SAT, that state parties that are signatory to this convention should recognize the right of every child to a standard of living adequate for a child's physical, mental, spiritual, moral, and social development. But what would you do if you were a policymaker in Africa in response to the issue of street children? I called on two young Ghanaians, Kwame Asante Ofori and Solomon Abo, in the studio here with me.
There's this huge problem in Ghana where we have this rural-urban shift, where lots of kids are leaving the rural areas to come to the big cities to look for jobs. Because there's really nothing going on in the rural areas. Yeah.
Right.
So when they come around, they have no relatives in the cities, they have no one to look up to, no one to help them, and they end up becoming street kids.
Okay. Do they find these jobs, Solomon?
For most of them, they have to do what we call, like, they have to carry stuff for people, like, you know.
Like menial jobs.
Menial jobs. Right. And there's a name for them, like, where you come, the ladies especially, they come and stay, sleep at the market where they help people carry their stuff from the market. And
so the market is their place of...
Yes, any place of convenience, any place where you can sleep and be a bit safe, it's where they sleep. And that is why it's more dangerous.
Is anybody concerned about these street children to the point where they actually have to put a figure on them?
Well, I quite remember there were some guys who started an NGO and some people were trying to do something like that too. But as to whether the motive is really to get them out, because people have different motives.
Interesting to say that. Interesting that you say that about motive, because there have been many organizations, NGOs, that have cropped up around the continent, and many say that these are just like get-rich schemes by the proprietors of these NGOs. Do you feel that is the case?
Some of them are get-rich schemes because they don't get taxed. So anyone just gets up, creates an NGO and says, okay, I'm channeling funds for street kids. But who is there to actually monitor if these street kids are actually getting those funds and the help they need? So at least with me, I feel like the problem has to be curbed at the source. If this is a Ghanaian thing, right? I don't know about the rest of Africa, but to me, I feel if these street kids are coming from the rural areas to come and look for jobs in the cities, people should move to the rural areas, create an enterprise for them there, help them practice a trade, you know, help the rural areas flourish. That way they don't have to move to the big cities at some failed promise of getting a quick job or some quick money to help their families back home.
Right.
If you're able to do that, then the plight of the street child is reduced. More people are not running to the city all the time.
And what does it mean for a country to have street children? What is the lost potential there?
Well, I think the loss is really huge, because, of course, there's this saying, and it's becoming monotonous, that the backbone of every economy is its youth and then the young ones that are coming. And of course, these are the human resources that every country has. You choose to leave them at your own negligence, and that can affect you in the future.
Right.
So for us to sit aloof and say, okay, these are street children, they are not our kids, I don't care. I bet you, and I keep telling people that if you sit and you say you don't care, irrespective of whether you have the position to help or not, those people will grow up, they become street gangs, and they will shoot you and take your car or take something from you.
Right.
So we all stand the risk of getting facing the problems that would potentially affect us if we look and we don't do anything about it.
Kwame, what do you feel the government should do?
There's this thing where if you push someone to the wall and you keep pushing and they never respond, one day they are going to get fed up and push you back.
Right.
The government, as it stands now, I don't feel has solid policies to curb this issue of street children for Ghana. I don't know about the rest of Africa, but I'm speaking from the Ghanaian experience, because the canker of street children keeps growing. To me, I feel the way to curb this thing is education and creating enterprise for these kids in their home region, like whether it be the rural areas or the far north, far west. Educate them, let them go to school, even if they don't want to go to school. I mean, school is not for everyone.
Right.
Teach them a trade, and then teach them a way to be entrepreneurs where they can flourish where they are. at least it reduces the burden on you, the government, where everyone is crying foul. Where is the government? How come the government is not helping us? If you teach them to help themselves, then you reduce your burden as the government. But then the government is not doing anything in that regard. So we are going to keep having street children every day because they keep running to the city, you know?
Solomon, what would you do if you're a government person who is in charge of, who had the ability to make any policies around street children? What would you do?
Well, of course, like he first highlighted, education should be key. And there's this misconception that, like, when you go to the big cities, it's honey flowing and it's peaceful, there's enjoyment, which is really not the case. It's really harsher and there's a lot of hassle there rather than even the rural areas. So I think that the issue must be tackled from the root. We cannot claim that we want to help them when we sit in our cities and enjoy our air conditions and leave them to wallow in poverty. There must be proper policy initiations and implementations that would gear towards rural development. It could be electrification. It could be having recreational facilities. The things that would, basic things that humans need, the ones that we have in the cities, that would let them stay where they are. Then again, if you provide jobs for their families and they are being able to cater for well, I don't think if a child is well fed and is living so well in a rural, he would try to run away and come all the way to a big city and struggle. So it is multifaceted. The government has a role to play. We have roles to play as individuals as well. So from the policy angle, I think government has to have a clearly distinguished, like a distinct policy that would address all these issues across the length and breadth.
Honestly, I think a lot of governments in Africa don't have a clear-cut policy for their youth.
Mm.
They always think about the economy and infrastructure, but they forget the economy and infrastructure includes human resource. And the fastest growing human resource is going to be your youth coming in to take over you, the government, who is growing old and would retire. And once you don't have a policy geared towards the youth, you are a failed government. If it's a witch about me, I will pen the middle of the mini baby cot. Baby do so a baby so to men for pin one betty cot. Image a young cot. Now young for go people. Yan 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 fata. Who name is a member to Wakasa. Mama then a family go home with bush and four only bigger bomb pata. Yamuhia no one saka. A do an a job on your papa. Mamma for my coming to a bassa son of me for Munya. Papa would never that I would do.
Because of the way the families are here in Malawi, it's like most of the times parents, they're not caring about the children, because most of these kids, they have parents. You wonder why you find them in the streets or their parents are alive. It only mean one thing. It's either the parents don't care about them or they don't provide with what they want. They don't give them the love they want, or they're being so strict that like they're torturing them. So they prefer being in a place whereby they cannot be tortured, they cannot be told what to do, where they can find love in their friends. So they prefer going to the street.
I think the main reason why it causes children to live in streets, it's because of poverty. A lot of children, when they see that there's no food in their homes or they cannot afford to buy good clothes, they end up going into the streets.
Unfortunately, the trend that we have seen most of the times is that the governments tend to criminalize street begging, so on and so forth. In the first place, you have to provide a conducive environment for these children. As government, it has to enact laws that should be able to protect each and every child, including those children that are on the streets. On the part of the private sector, they need to assist several government departments, like the welfare department, in ensuring that they bring those children from the streets and then back into homes. You know?
street children are so often the casualties of hard economic times, of poverty, domestic violence, physical and mental abuse, also war in some parts of the world. Now, every street child has a reason for being on the streets, Jackson. And while some of them are lured by this imagined or supposed freedom on the streets, the great majority of our street children around the world are actually pushed onto the street by sheer desperation because they have nowhere else to go, because they're either escaping a horrible situation wherever they come from, and they just have nowhere else to go.
It's obvious, Nadia, that most of these street children often come from very poor backgrounds. Their needs and problems are a result of wanting to meet a basic need for their survival. They often have to go through the struggle of providing for themselves with those simple basics that we usually take for granted, things like food, like shelter, and clothing. iCare is an organization in South Africa. It has headquarters in Durban. It helps street children by providing them with the basic needs such as food and shelter. I spoke to Anne Slater from her offices in Durban. She's the manager. She talks to me about the work her organization does to rehabilitate and reintegrate street children in Durban and Johannesburg.
iCare was started in 2002 by a gentleman called Graham Cochran, who saw a need for the children on the streets to be looked at as children in need and vulnerable children. And so iCare was launched, and it has grown. It was a conduit initially for funding to go to other organizations who were looking after children, but as the need grew and we just felt we wanted to become more responsible and not simply a quick fix situation, iCare was launched, and we now have a full holistic cycle that we place the children into once we find them on the streets.
Okay. Now, when you talk to these kids that you find on the streets, are there common reasons as to why they end up on the streets in the first place?
You know what, the reasons for being on the streets, obviously there's quite a few, but the main reason for them being on the streets is poverty. And then second to that, a high percentage is abuse. And, you know, obviously poverty and abuse can sometimes go hand in hand, because where there's a dire need, there's sometimes abuse. And abuse isn't only physical, it's starving children of their basic needs. And that is food, shelter, schooling, love and attention. So, you know, we have poverty and abuse as our two highest percentages of the reasons for children being on the streets.
What age group are we talking about?
The children that we encounter on the streets can range anything from as young as 6 years old, but normally, I would say normally between 10 and 16.
What do you do with them? How do you help them get off the streets?
We build relationships of trust with them on the streets at their point, where they are. Once we've built relationships of trust, our outreach workers then encourage them into our drop-in center, where we see to some of their basic needs, such as feeding them, allowing them to have a shower, enter into a daily activity, seeing to any medical needs they may have, dealing with the psychosocial side of things, where a one-on-one interview with a social worker, and all that at our drop-in center. And once we've identified those boys, and we do, and I'm going to talk about boys because that's all we really do deal with on the streets is boys. Once we've identified those kids that want to then change, and we have identified where they come from, why they're on the streets, we've looked at their background, we've done a home visit to see if there is a home. We then offer the children the opportunity to enter a rehabilitation center.
You use the word rehabilitation and change.
Yes.
It feels to me like there is some sort of anomaly here with the kids, but they usually end up on the streets. They're just victims of circumstance.
They are victims. They're vulnerable children. Yes, they're vulnerable children.
And when you talk about rehabilitating them, then what do you mean?
We need to rehabilitate children who have been on the streets for anything longer than a week, even. They are exposed, obviously, to drugs on the streets. Street life becomes a way of life. It becomes a bit of a rush way of living. They're making a living sometimes off the streets, as you know, getting donations from people at traffic lights. It obviously then becomes a habit that they need to do it.
So how receptive are they to these options that you give them, these changes that you're offering to them? Why would anybody say no to them?
You know what? They shouldn't say no to them. I mean, obviously, if they're on stronger substances and depending on their age as well, and perhaps even the reason they're on the streets, if they've entered into criminal activity and that's a way of life that they're going to sort of almost, you know, go towards and they're very hooked into it, then it's very difficult to work with them. I always say eye care never fails the children. The children fail to accept what we can offer them and the change that we can offer them. So there is really no reason why they would not accept what we have to offer them. The opportunity to come off the streets, the opportunity to reunite with family, the opportunity to be clean and free from drugs and to re-enter education and just a family situation again.
Now, you are expecting a very big meeting in Durban in a couple
yes,
of weeks,
right.
The COP17. Are you worried that the government, like in other places around the world where we've seen governments coming in and taking away street children, in the face of these international meetings, you know, for cosmetic purposes?
You know what? Where there's smoke, there's often fire. Mm. All right, and I'm not going to deny the fact that there's a quick fix sort of thought process when it comes to quickly just get them off the streets and everything will look all right. And not wanting to then leave it to the organizations such as us who are working with them. But our work with these children is obviously longer term. It's not a quick fix situation. We can't promise to round up every child on the streets and have them into shelters and homes and rehabilitation centers overnight.
Okay.
As quick as the government would like us to. But where the children are removed from perhaps begging at certain traffic lights and sitting outside certain hotels and littering the beachfront area, they are removed from there. Sometimes we called in to assist with the removal, or you know, and the children are encouraged to kind of go and try, you know, sort of be somewhere else, in other words.
Okay.
So yes, I mean, they definitely are, you know, there is an attempt to clean up the area. But from a physical, violent point of view, we haven't been witness to any of that. We have heard the children have been dropped off sort of much further up the coast, and then they eventually find their way back. But that's no harm to them. I mean, they've just simply been taken out of their familiar surroundings, and they do find their way back. And as I said, that's a quick fix, and okay. Eye care aren't into a quick fix. We're there for the long haul.
That was Ann Slater in Durban, South Africa. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Thank you for tuning in. So, Nadia, let me bring you here into the conversation. Earlier, you alluded to street children being casualties of war, poverty, and domestic violence. So it is true that providing targeted interventions to meet the needs of the various needs of street children requires to understand who they are, what they need, what they do, because they do have different reasons why they're on the streets.
I think that targeted interventions are one of the answers, Jackson. Interventions that meet the needs of street children. It requires a real understanding of why these young people are on the streets in the first place. It requires a real examination of what it is they need in order to get their lives back on track, in order to be reabsorbed into society so that they can become productive citizens. What they do and why they're in the streets in the first place, like we said earlier, this needs to be understood because this is the root of the problem. Voice of America. Another aspect is, Jackson, how serious are governments when we talk about street children? I'll give you two examples just from a South African perspective. When we saw the World Cup, preparing for the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, there was suddenly a big show of getting street children off the streets. Now, running up to the World Cup, after the World Cup, all that fuss has died down. But as the country was preparing for the World Cup, there was suddenly this cleanup operation where we had to get street kids off the street, etc. And so obviously there becomes this debate about, you know, it's more of a cosmetic thing. Let's hide these social ills that we have, because street children are a clear sign of social ills in a country. And so we need to examine all year round, not just before we are going to be on show for the rest of the world, all year round, what is your country doing to help street kids?
Now, Yohani Kainamura started an orphanage in Rwanda for street children affected by the genocide. What is amazing about this story is that he was still himself a student and he did it on his meager income. So does this mean that each one of us has in our small capacities the ability to be part of this solution?
Well, honestly, I thought I didn't have the capacity to do it, but in my heart I was like, even if I can't help everybody, that at least let me try to help at least one.
Okay.
So that's how I start with two street kids, and then I increased the number as the time went by.
Okay, so you started only with two kids because you had meager student resources, of course. Were you able to raise funds elsewhere to increase your operations?
Not in the first, at least in the first 2 to 3 years, where I used my own resources and also my family would help me out. But later on, I had some people who knew me, my school classmate, my classmates would come along and say, I have this, I have that. So that's how it happened. I really never had to go out and raise funds officially. I would just have friends coming along and say, hey, I can donate this much.
Okay. Now, somebody would think that at the point you started it, you're in undergrad. Do you even know what you were getting into?
Well, not really. But the one thing I knew was certain was that the fact that I was here getting opportunities wasn't for a coincidence. So I knew that being so blessed and getting those opportunities, I knew that I had the responsibility to do something. So the special circumstances that I got into college, and that was mainly because I was expected to do something in return. So I didn't really feel that, to me, there was no other option but to do something for somebody else. Okay. Somebody was doing something for me.
So giving back to society that you feel had given you something also.
That's correct. And I didn't really feel like I needed to wait for too long to accumulate wealth, because I knew that anything you have can help somebody.
The young people that you take in, mostly orphans?
Well, I would say that about 50-50 biological orphans, but there are some others are not really orphans biologically. But to me, physically, they're orphans because they're abandoned. And they just live on their own on the streets. In fact, you know, some of them don't even know their parents. We know there are parents somewhere, but they are not sure who their parents are. Or even if they do know, they can't talk to them. They don't go there. So they
don't really have like a family, really.
They don't have families. They just live under bridges, and that's all.
Do you have any success stories of any young people that graduated through your program and have become productive members of society? Is there hope, in other words, for these young people on the streets who are rehabilitated?
Yes. There are different ways that we measure our success stories. Some of them, we have about few who really got better and they reunited with their family. They returned back to live with their parents, and now they're successful in their homes. We also have a few other young kids, young men actually, who are now about to graduate high school. So you can imagine somebody who used to eat from the dumpster now graduating from high school, and actually one of them has never been a second in class. He's always first. You know, we're also very productive in our community. There's one this last year, about 6 of our children made up the soccer team of the community. So they felt like contributing members of the society instead of being there where everybody has to feel sorry for them. So they felt like they were contributing.
That was Yohani Kainamura, He's currently a professor in Miami.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is at Upfront Africa. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye. Yaga. Barry Bundes.